Welcome to the Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. Just a quick bit of housekeeping. This show is switching from Sunday nights at 6 to Wednesday nights at 9, but I hope to still have your ear at a different time. Everything changes, and we suddenly wake up one day and we're older. That's the theme of my Sharon Hour tonight. So when exactly does old age start? Noel Coward suggested that his old age was due to start Tuesday or Wednesday. He said he only ever objected to paying taxes when he realized he wouldn't have enough for his old age. And that's when he suggested that was due to start next Tuesday or Wednesday. The comedian Stephen Wright asks, how young do you have to be to die of old age? Well, old age is coming later and later. In terms of physical state, we're told that 50 is the new 40 and 60 is the new 50, which is good to know because, according to Victor Hugo, 40 is the old age of youth and 50 is already the youth of old age. So I'm well into old age. But this show tonight is not exclusively for people of my age or even middle age because everyone gets older. Everyone leaves aspects of childhood and youth behind at some point. According to Teddy Roosevelt, old age is like everything else. To make a success of it, you have to start young. Consider that, my hearties.
Once I was 7 years old, my mama told me, go make yourself some friends or you'll be lonely. Once I was 7 years old. It was a big, big world, but we thought we were bigger, pushing each other to the limits. We were learning quicker. By 11, smoking herb and drinking burning liquor. Never rich, so we were out to make that steady figure. Once I was 11 years old, my daddy told me, go get yourself a wife or you'll be lonely. Once I was 11 years old. My daddy before me, so I started writing songs, I started writing stories. Something about that glory just always seemed to bore me, cause only those I really love will ever really know me. Once I was 20 years old, my story got told before the morning sun when life was lonely. Once I was 20 years old. Only see my goals, I don't believe in failure, cause I know the smallest voices, they can make it major. I got my boys with me, at least those in favor, and if we don't meet before I leave, I hope I'll see you later. Once I was 20 years old, my story got told, I was writing about everything I saw before me. Songs have been sold. We've traveled around the world and we're still roaming. Soon we'll be 30 years old. I'm still learning about life. My woman brought children for me, so I can sing them all my songs and I can tell them stories. Most of my boys are with me, some are still out seeking glory, and some I had to leave behind. My brother, I'm still savvy. Soon I'll be 60 years old. My daddy got 61. Remember life and then your life becomes a better one. I made a man so happy when I wrote a letter once. I hope my children come and visit once or twice a month. Soon I'll be 60 years old. Will I think the world is cold? Or will I have a lot of children who can bore me? Soon I'll be 60 years old. Soon I'll be 60 years old. Will I think the world is cold? Or will I have a lot of children who can bore me? Soon I'll be 60 years old.
since I was 7 years old. Mama told me, go make yourself some friends or you'll be lonely. Once I was 7 years old. Once I was 7 years old.
Exactly how it is. You're 7 and then suddenly you're 60. The only difference is 60 is about as far as your imagination will let you go when you're still in the youth of your life. But in fact, we are living much, much longer, all of us, and getting older later. Getting older is the topic of my Sharon Hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. To paraphrase Emily Dickinson, old age doesn't come on gradually like you'd have thought. It happens suddenly. We wake up as a progression of everyone we've been in the past, just a day older, not a chapter older. And yet,
we are living on average today 34 years longer than our great-grandparents did. That's an entire second adult lifetime that's been added to our lifespan. And yet we're still living with the old paradigm of age as an arch. That's the metaphor, the old metaphor. You're born, you peak at midlife and decline into decrepitude. Age as pathology. But many people today, philosophers, artists, doctors, scientists, are taking a new look at what I call the third act, the last three decades of life. They realize that this is actually a developmental stage of life with its own significance, as different from midlife as adolescence is from childhood.
But we've come to accept longer lives with a kind of a complacency, even ease. But make no mistake, longer lives can, and I believe will, improve quality of life at all ages. We nearly double the length of time that we're living. For the first time in the history of the species, the majority of babies born in the developed world are having the opportunity to grow old. Now, there are problems associated with aging. Diseases, poverty, loss of social status. It's hardly time to rest on our laurels. We're no genetically hardier than our ancestors were 10,000 years ago. But the more we learn about aging, the clearer it becomes that a sweeping downward course is grossly inaccurate. Aging brings some rather remarkable improvements. Increased knowledge, expertise, and emotional aspects of life improve. Older people are happier than middle-aged people, and younger people certainly. Study after study is coming to the same conclusion. The CDC recently conducted a survey where they asked respondents simply to tell them whether they experienced significant psychological distress in the previous week, and fewer older people answered affirmatively to that question than middle-aged people, and younger people as well. And a recent Gallup poll asked participants how much stress and worry and anger they had experienced the previous day, and stress, worry, anger all decrease with age.
Well, you might say to yourself, I actually said to myself, that's because we older brigade have less going on in our lives. We're a bit sorted at this point, less happening, so less to make you stressed. But then you'd also think, less happening, less to make you happy. And the research seems to contradict that, as you've just heard from Stanford psych professor Laura Carstensen. And here again, Jane Fonda.
It turns out most people over 50 feel better, are less hostile, less anxious. We tend to see commonalities more than differences. We're happier. This is not what I expected, trust me. I come from a long line of depressives. As I was approaching my late 40s, when I would wake up in the morning, my first six thoughts would all be negative. And I got scared. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to become a crotchety old lady. But now that I am actually smack dab in the middle of my own third act, I realize I've never been happier. I have such a powerful feeling of well-being. And I've discovered that when you're inside oldness, as opposed to looking at it from the outside, fear subsides. You realize you're still yourself, maybe even more so. You know, Picasso once said, it takes a long time to become young.
That's great. Age is a state of mind. I'm all for it.
Fairy tales can come true. They can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes and impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. The best part, you have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
Young at heart, that's the key, right? Getting older is the topic on my The Sharon Hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Luna's KX935. And really, we don't have to acknowledge age is relevant, provided we stay young at heart. It's hard anyway, once we're adults, that is, of any age whatsoever, for us to actually think of ourselves as older than we ever were. The financier Bernard Baruch suggested that old age is 10 years older than you, while the painter Francis Bacon thought it was 15 years older than you, and based on that theory, he would never get old. I've also heard it said that old age is 10 years older than your parents. That's something that I've always gone by. The philosopher Nietzsche posited that when you're considering marrying someone, which is usually in your early adulthood, you should ask yourself whether this is someone you could have a good conversation with into your old age, because everything else in marriage is transitory. That doesn't necessarily help us because our needs and values change as we get older. So unless we can persuade ourselves into different values that we have when we're young and we just want the most attractive, sexiest person that we can find, we're not going to have the wisdom that Nietzsche managed to accumulate over the years.
Years ago, my colleagues and I embarked on a study where we followed the same group of people over a 10-year period. Originally, the sample was aged 18 to 94. And we studied whether and how their emotional experiences changed as they grew older. Our participants would carry electronic pagers for a week at a time, and we'd page them throughout the day and evenings at random times, and every time we paged them, we'd ask them to answer several questions on a 1 to 7 scale. How happy are you right now? How sad are you right now? How frustrated are you right now? So that we could get a sense of the kinds of emotions and feelings they were having in their day-to-day lives. And using this intense study of individuals, we find that it's not one particular generation that's doing better than the others, but the same individuals over time come to report relatively greater positive experience. Now, there is a slight downturn at very advanced ages, but at no point does it return to the levels we see in early adulthood.
Jane Fonda, didn't she seem to have it all when she was in her 20s and early adulthood? Money, beauty, fame, sex symbol, Barbarella, the handsomest, most interesting leading men, both on screen and in real life. And yet, at 80, she claims to be happier than she's ever been. Those things that are supposed to do it for us don't always do it for us. Getting older, particularly really older, can be just what the doctor ordered, And it's the topic of my sharing now tonight. That's me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. While youth has many bonuses, it's not always the fun time it's made out to be, the best time of one's life.
When she was 22, the future looked bright. She's nearly 30 now, and she's out every night. I see that look in her face. She's got that look in her eye. She's thinking, how did I get here? Wondering.
So you dying to get old like me, listener? That is, are you living to get old like me? I'm Sharon James. This is the Sharon Hour on Laguna's KX935 at its new time, Wednesday nights at 9 instead of Sunday nights at 6. And getting older is tonight's topic. We've been hearing from senior citizens Jane Fonda and Stanford psych professor Laura Carstensen how a lot of us in this third stage of life are happier than we've ever been.
Now, it's really too simplistic to say that older people are happy. In our study, they are more positive, but they're also more likely than younger people to experience mixed emotions. Sadness at the same time you experience happiness. You know, that tear in the eye when you're smiling at a friend. And other research has shown that older people seem to engage with sadness more comfortably. They're more accepting of sadness than younger people are, and we suspect that this may help to explain why older people are better than younger people at solving hotly charged emotional conflicts and debates. Older people can view injustice with compassion, but not despair. And all things being equal, older people direct their cognitive resources, like attention and memory, to positive information more than negative. If we show older, middle-aged, younger people images, and we later ask them to recall all the images that they can, older people, but not younger people, remember more positive images than negative images. We've asked older and younger people to view faces in laboratory studies, some frowning, some smiling. Older people look toward the smiling faces and away from the frowning, angry faces. In day-to-day life, this translates into greater enjoyment and satisfaction. But as social scientists, we've continued to ask about possible alternatives. We've said, well, maybe older people report more positive emotions because they're cognitively impaired. we've said, could it be that positive emotions are simply easier to process than negative emotions? And so you switch to the positive emotions. Maybe our neural centers in our brain are degraded such that we're unable to process negative emotions anymore. But that's not the case. Under conditions where it really matters, older people do process the negative information just as well as the positive information. But the most mentally sharp older adults are the ones who show this positivity effect the most.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. Latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You gotta spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium is likely to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale and Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything seems so dark? Man said we gotta accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. In the ark, what did they do just when everything seemed so dark? Man said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In Between. Oh no, don't go there, babe. It's way dark for you. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Paul McCartney accentuating the positive, not in perfect voice, but doing what he's always done, being a pop star, doing his music, doing what he loves, well into his third act. Getting older is the topic of my Sharon Hour tonight on Lagunas KX935. That's me, Sharon James, at a new time, a Wednesday, 9 o'clock, instead of Sunday, 6 o'clock time slot. But still doing my thing as well. And talking about time, back to Stanford Psych Professor Laura Carstensen from her TED Talk with her own perspectives.
If there's a paradox of aging, it's that recognizing that we won't live forever changes our perspective on life in positive ways. These changes are grounded fundamentally in the uniquely human ability to monitor time, not just clock time and calendar time, but lifetime. When time horizons are long and nebulous, as they typically are in youth, people are constantly preparing, trying to soak up all the information they possibly can, taking risks, exploring. We might spend time with people we don't even like, because it's somehow interesting. You know, we might learn something unexpected. We go on blind dates. You know, after all, if it doesn't work out, there's always tomorrow. People over 50, don't go on blind dates. As we age, our time horizons grow shorter and our goals change. When we recognize that we don't have all the time in the world, we see our priorities most clearly. We take less notice of trivial matters. We savor life. We're more appreciative, more open to reconciliation. We invest in more emotionally important parts of life, and life gets better. So we're happier day to day.
That's pretty encouraging, isn't it? So if we do get happier as we get older, it must to some extent be because we accumulate some coping devices as we get older that allow us to take more things in our stride, disappointments as well as successes, and our happiness comes from smaller things. So maybe that's something we could pass on to younger people if we can persuade them. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 935, my new time slot of Wednesdays at 9 p.m. instead of Sunday nights at 6. And I'm talking about getting older on tonight's The Sharon Hour. Not just older on tonight's The Sharon Hour, but older in general. Here's psychologist Dan Gilbert talking about the research he's done on this topic. This is from his TED Talk.
You know, at every stage of our lives, we make decisions that will profoundly influence the lives of the people we're going to become. And then when we become those people, we're not always thrilled with the decisions we made. So young people pay good money to get tattoos removed that teenagers paid good money to get. Middle-aged people rush to divorce people who young adults rushed to marry. Older adults work hard to lose what middle-aged adults worked hard to gain. On and on and on. The question that fascinates me as a psychologist is, why do we make decisions that our future selves so often regret? Now, I think one of the reasons is that we have a fundamental misconception about the power of time. Every one of you knows that the rate of change slows over the human lifespan, that your children seem to change by the minute, but your parents seem to change by the year. But what is the name of this magical point in life where change suddenly goes from a gallop to a crawl? Is it teenage years? Is it middle age? Is it old age? The answer, it turns out, for most people is now, wherever now happens to be. All of us are walking around with an illusion that our personal history has just come to an end, that we have just recently become the people that we were always meant to be and will be for the rest of our lives. Here's three values, everybody holds all of them.
The three values Dan Gilbert's talking about are pleasure, success, and honesty.
But you probably know that as you grow, as you age, the balance of these values shifts. So we asked thousands of people, we asked half of them to predict for us how much their values would change in the next 10 years, and the other is to tell us how much their values had changed in the last 10 years. And this enabled us to do a really interesting kind of analysis, because it allowed us to compare the predictions of people, say, 18 years old, to the reports of people who were 28, and to do that kind of analysis throughout the lifespan. Here's what we found. First of all, change does slow down as we age, but it doesn't slow nearly as much as we think. At every age from 18 to 68 in our data set, people vastly underestimated how much change they would experience over the next 10 years. And it isn't just ephemeral things like values and personality. You can ask people about their likes and dislikes, their basic preferences. For example, name your best friend, your favorite kind of vacation, your favorite hobby, what's your favorite kind of music. We ask half of them to tell us, do you think that that will change over the next 10 years? And half of them to tell us, did that change over the last 10 years? And what we find, well, people predict that the friend they have now is the friend they'll have in 10 years. The vacation they most enjoy now is the one they'll enjoy in 10 years. And yet, people who are 10 years older all say, eh, you know, that's really changed. Because we overestimate current preferences, stability. Why does this happen? It probably has to do with the ease of remembering versus the difficulty of imagining.
Because I remember this day. Do you remember the time? all the things we said. Like I love you so I'll never let you go. Do you remember? Back in the spring.
Most of us can remember who we were 10 years ago, but we find it hard to imagine who we're going to be. And then we mistakenly think that because it's hard to imagine, it's not likely to happen. When people say, "I can't imagine that," they're usually talking about their own lack of imagination and not about the unlikelihood of the event that they're describing.
And I guess one of the bonuses of age is you tend to have a broader imagination because you've been through more things, and things you thought maybe weren't possible show themselves to be possible. You're tuned to The Sharer Now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My topic tonight, getting older. And I'm currently playing a part of a TED Talk by the wonderful psychologist Dan Gilbert on the topic of getting older and where our lives can lead us, whether we'd imagined it or not.
The bottom line is, time is a powerful force. It transforms our preferences, it reshapes our values, it alters our personalities. We seem to appreciate this fact, but only in retrospect. Only when we look backwards do we realize how much change happens in a decade. It's as if, for most of us, the present is a magic time. It's a watershed on the timeline. It's the moment at which we finally become ourselves. Human beings are works in progress that mistakenly think they're finished. The person you are right now is as transient, as fleeting, and as temporary as all the people you've ever been. The one constant in our life is change.
Nothing stays the same. Everything must change. mysteries do unfold. 'Cause that's the way of time. Yes, everything must change. There are not many things in life you can be sure. Can be sure, except rain comes from the clouds, sun lights up the sky, and hummingbirds do fly. Love
that, Sarah Vaughan, Everything Must Change. Getting older is the topic on tonight's KX935's The Sharon Hour. So going back, what was it Dan Gilbert said? Human beings are works in progress that mistakenly think they're finished products. Jane Fonda concurs.
Perhaps the task of the third act is to finish up the task of finishing ourselves. For me, it began as I was approaching my third act, my 60th birthday. How was I supposed to live it? What was I supposed to accomplish in this final act? And I realized that in order to know where I was going, I had to know where I'd been. And so I went back and I studied my first two acts, trying to see who I was then, who I really was, not who my parents or other people told me I was, or treated me like I was, but who was I? Who were my parents? Not as parents, but as people. Who were my grandparents? How did they treat my parents? These kinds of things. I discovered a couple of years later that this process that I had gone through is called by psychologists doing a life review, and they say it can give new significance and clarity and meaning to a person's life. You may discover, as I did, that a lot of things that you used to think were your fault, a lot of things that you used to think about yourself, really had nothing to do with you. It wasn't your fault. You're just fine. And you're able to go back and forgive them and forgive yourself. You're able to free yourself from your past. You can work to change your relationship to your past. Now, while I was writing about this, I came upon a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a German psychiatrist who'd spent 5 years in a Nazi concentration camp. And he wrote that while he was in the camp, he could tell, should they ever be released, which of the people would be okay and which would not. And he wrote this: everything you have in life can be taken from you except one thing: your freedom to choose how you will respond to the situation. This is what determines the quality of the life we've lived. Not whether we've been rich or poor, famous or unknown, healthy or suffering. What determines our quality of life is how we relate to these realities, what kind of meaning we assign them, what kind of attitude we cling to about them, what state of mind we allow them to trigger. Perhaps the central purpose of the third act is to go back and to try, if appropriate, to change our relationship to the past. It turns out that cognitive research shows when we are able to do this, it manifests neurologically. Neural pathways are created in the brain. You see, if you have, over time, reacted negatively to past events and people, neural pathways are laid down by chemical and electrical signals that are sent through the brain. And over time, these neural pathways become hardwired. They become the norm, even if it's bad for us because it causes us stress and anxiety. If, however, we can go back and alter our relationship, revision our relationship to past people and events, neural pathways can change. And if we can maintain the more positive feelings about the past, that becomes the new norm. It's like resetting a thermostat. You know, it's not having experiences that make us wise. It's reflecting on the experiences that we've had that makes us wise and that helps us become whole, brings wisdom and authenticity. It helps us become what we might have been. Women start off whole, don't we? I mean, as girls, we're feisty. Yahoo says. We have agency. We are the subjects of our own lives. But very often, many if not most of us, when we hit puberty, we start worrying about fitting in and being popular. And we become the subjects and objects of other people's lives. But now, in our third acts, it may be possible for us to circle back to where we started and know it for the first time. And if we can do that, it will not just be for ourselves. Older women are the largest demographic in the world. If we can go back and redefine ourselves and become whole, this will create a cultural shift in the world, and it will give an example to younger generations so that they can reconceive their own lifespan. Everything in the world, everything is in a state of decline and decay. Entropy, the second law of thermodynamics. There's only one exception to this universal law, and that is the human spirit, which can continue to evolve upwards, bringing us into wholeness, authenticity, and wisdom. This upward ascension can happen even in the face of extreme physical challenges. About 3 years ago, I read an article in the New York Times about a man named Neil Selinger, 57 years old, a retired lawyer, who had joined the writers group at Sarah Lawrence, where he found his writer's voice. 2 years later, he was diagnosed with ALS, commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease. It's a terrible disease. It's fatal. It wastes the body, but the mind remains intact. In this article, Mr. Selinger wrote the following to describe what was happening to him. And I quote, "As my muscles weakened, my writing became stronger. As I slowly lost my speech, I gained my voice. As I diminished, I grew. As I lost so much, I finally started to find myself." I don't want to romanticize aging. Obviously, there's no guarantee that it can be a time of fruition and growth. Some of it is a matter of luck. Some of it, obviously, is genetic. One third of it, in fact, is genetic, and there isn't much we can do about that. But that means that two thirds of how well we do in the third act, we can do something about.
And listen, there is some stuff we can do about the genetic part also, according to biochemist Cynthia Kenyon. And I'm going to play you a bit of her TED Talk now on this KX935's The Sharer Now with me, Sharon James, on the topic tonight of getting older, because she has done some very interesting research and seems to know some ways that we can actually stave off getting older. A teeny little worm has been showing her how.
Scientists have for a long time thought you just wear out, there's nothing you can do about it, kind of like an old shoe. But if you look in nature, you see that different kinds of animals can have really different lifespans. Now, these animals are different from one another because they have different genes. So that suggests that somewhere in these genes, somewhere in the DNA, are genes for aging, genes that allow them to have different lifespans. So if there are genes like that, then you can imagine that if you could change one of the genes in an experiment, an aging gene, maybe you could slow down aging and extend lifespan. And if you could do that, then you could find the genes for aging, and if they exist and you can find them, then maybe one could eventually do something about it. So we set out to look for genes that control aging. We studied a little tiny roundworm called C. elegans, which is just about the size of a comma in a sentence. And we were really optimistic that we could find something because there had been a report of a long-lived mutant. So we started to change genes at random, looking for long-lived animals, and we were very lucky to find that mutations that damage one single gene, called DAF2, doubled the lifespan of the little worm. After a month, they're very short-lived, that's why we like to study them for studies of aging. After a month, the normal worms are all dead. Get out your handkerchiefs here. In just 2 weeks, the normal worms are old. The tissues of the animal are starting to deteriorate. But most of the mutant worms are still alive, aging more slowly. It takes this worm 2 days to age as much as the normal worm ages in 1 day. And when I tell people about this, they tend to think of maybe a 90 or 80 or 90-year-old person who looks really good for being 90 or 80. But it's really more like this. Let's say you're a 30-year-old guy, and you're a bachelor, and you're dating people, and you meet someone that you really like, you get to know her, and you're in a restaurant, and you say, well, how old are you? She says, I'm 60. That's what it's like. And you would never know. You would never know until she told you.
And I doubt she'd tell. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935 in my new Wednesday night at 9 time slot. My topic tonight is getting older, and biochemist Cynthia Kenyon has discovered a possible gene that staves off aging and a possible drug that can thereby promote the anti-aging process. The gene is called DAF2.
So what is the DAF2 gene? Well, as you know, genes, which are part of the DNA, they're instructions to make a protein that does something. And the DAF2 gene encodes a hormone receptor. If you make a mutation in the DAF2 gene so that you get a receptor that doesn't work as well, the animal lives longer. So that means that the normal function of this hormone receptor is to speed up aging. It makes it go faster. So it's like the animal has the grim reaper inside of itself, speeding up aging. Now, aging is subject to control by the genes, and specifically by hormones. There are lots of hormones. There's testosterone, adrenaline, you know about a lot of them. The DAF2 hormone receptor is very similar to the receptor for the hormone insulin and IGF-1. Now, you've all heard of at least insulin. Insulin is a hormone that promotes the uptake of nutrients into your tissues after you eat a meal. And the hormone IGF-1 promotes growth. So these functions were known for these hormones for a long time, but our studies suggested that maybe they have a third function that nobody knew about. Maybe they also affect aging. And it's looking like that's the case. So after we made our discoveries with little C. elegans, people who worked on other kinds of animals started asking, if we make the same DAF2 mutation, the hormone receptor mutation, in other animals, will they live longer? And that is the case in flies. If you change this hormone pathway in flies, they live longer. And also in mice. And mice are mammals like us. So it's an ancient pathway because it must have arisen a long time ago in evolution, so the touch that it still works in all these animals. And the common precursor also gave rise to people. So maybe it's working in people the same way. And there are hints of this. So for example, there's one study that was done in a population of Ashkenazi Jews in New York City. And just like any population, most of the people, you know, will live to about 70 or 80. But some lived to be 90 or 100. And what they found was that people who lived to 90 or 100 were more likely to have DAF2 mutations, that is, changes in the gene that encodes the receptor for IGF-1. And these changes made the gene not act as well as the normal gene would have acted. They damaged the gene. Okay, so those are hints suggesting that humans are susceptible to the effects of these hormones for aging. So the next question, of course, is there any effect on age-related disease? As you age, you're much more likely to get cancer, Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, all sorts of diseases. It turns out that these long-lived mutants are more resistant to all these diseases. They hardly get cancer, and when they do, it's not as severe. And it makes sense in a way that they're still young, so why would they be getting diseases of aging until they're old? So it suggests that if we could have a therapeutic or a pill to take to replicate some of these effects in humans, maybe we would have a way of combating lots of different age-related diseases all at once. So how can a hormone ultimately affect the rate of aging? Well, it turns out that in the DAF2 mutants, a whole lot of genes are switched on in the DNA that encode proteins that protect the cells and the tissues and to repair damage. And the way that they're switched on is by a gene regulator protein called FOXO. So it's really interesting. These animals have within them the latent capacity to live much longer than they normally do. They have the ability to protect themselves from any kinds of damage, which we think makes them live longer. So what about the normal worm? Well, when the DAF2 receptor is active, then it triggers a series of events that prevent FOXO from getting into the nucleus where the DNA is. So it can't turn the genes on. That's how it works. That's why we don't see the long lifespan until we have the DAF2 mutant. But what good is this for the worm? Well, we think that the insulin and IGF-1 hormones are hormones that are particularly active under favorable conditions in the good times, when food is plentiful and there's not a lot of stress in the environment. Then they promote the uptake of nutrients. You can store the food, use it for energy, grow, etc. But what we think is that under conditions of stress, the levels of these hormones drop. for example, having limited food supply. And that, we think, is registered by the animal as a danger signal, a signal that things are not okay and that it should roll out its protective capacity. So you can think of Fox O as being like a building superintendent. So maybe he's a little bit lazy, but he's there. He's taking care of the building, but it's deteriorating. And then suddenly he learns that there's going to be a hurricane. So he doesn't actually do anything himself. He gets on the telephone, just like Fox O gets on the DNA, and he calls up, you know, the roofer, the window person, the painter, the floor person. And they all come and they fortify the house, and then the hurricane comes through, and the house is in much better condition than it would normally have been in. And not only that, it can also just last longer, even if there isn't a hurricane. So that's the concept here for how we think this life extension ability exists. Now, the really cool thing about FOXO is that there are different forms of it. We all have FOXO genes, but we don't all have exactly the same form of the FOXO gene. Just like we all have eyes, but some of us have blue eyes and some of us have brown eyes. And there are certain forms of the FOXO gene that have been found to be more frequently present in people who live to be 90 or 100. And that's the case all over the world. We don't know the details of how this works, but we do know then that FOXO genes can impact the lifespan of people. And that means that maybe if we tweak it a little bit, we can increase the health and longevity of people. So this is really exciting to me. FOXO is a protein that we found in these little roundworms to affect lifespan, and here it affects lifespan in people. So we've been trying in our lab now to develop drugs that will activate this FOXO cell using human cells now in order to try to come up with drugs that will delay aging and age-related diseases. And I'm really optimistic that this is going to work. There are now lots of different proteins that are known to affect aging. And for at least one of them, there is a drug. There's one called TOR, which is another nutrient sensor, like the insulin pathway. And mutations that damage the TOR gene, just like the DAF2 mutations, extend lifespan in worms and flies and mice. In this case, there's already a drug called rapamycin that binds to the TOR protein and inhibits its activity. And you can take rapamycin and give it to a mouse, even when it's pretty old, like age 60 for a human. If you give the mouse rapamycin, it will live longer. Now, I don't want you all to go out taking rapamycin. It is a drug for people, but it suppresses the immune system. So people take it to prevent organ transplants from being rejected. So this may not be the perfect drug for staying young longer, but still, here's a drug that you can give to mice at a pretty old age that will extend their lifespan, which comes out of this science that's been done in all these different animals.
Here, biochemist Cynthia Kenyon is joined on stage by the organizer of her TED Talk, part of which I've just played you on this KX935's Sharon Hour tonight on getting older and staving off aging.
There are some creatures on this planet already that don't really do aging.
There are. There are some animals that don't seem to age. For example, there are some tortoises called Blanding's turtles, and they've been tagged, and they've been found to be 70 years old. And when you look at these 70-year-old turtles, you can't tell the difference just by looking between those turtles and 20-year-old turtles. And the 70-year-old ones actually are better at scouting out the good nesting places, and they also have more progeny every year. And there are other examples of these kinds of animals, terns, you know, certain kinds of birds are like this. And nobody knows if they really can live forever or what keeps them from aging. It's not clear. If you look at birds, which live a long time, the cells from the birds tend to be more resistant to a lot of different environmental stresses like high temperature. And our long-lived mutants are too. They're more resistant to these kinds of stresses. So it could be that the pathways that I've been talking about, which are set to run really quickly in the worm, have a different normal set point in something like a bird. And maybe they're set really even differently in animals with no senescence at all. Yeah. But we don't know.
But what you're talking about here is not extending human lifespan by preventing death so much as extending human youth span.
Yes, that's right.
You're listening to the Sharon Hour on Laguna's KX935. I'm Sharon James. This is my new time slot here on KX935. I used to be on Sunday nights at 6. My show tonight is about getting older and its benefits, and there are many, actually. Did you know, for instance, that the immune system improves with age? Maybe not with really old age, but there's evidence that from your 40s through your late 60s and early 70s, your immune system has assimilated the same kind of wisdom as your brain from being around all those years. If you've gone through an epidemic, it can remember that virus, often for 40 or 50 years, and knows to protect you from it. That translates into fewer colds. People in their 20s on average get 2 or 3 colds a year, while people who are over 50 usually only get 1 or maybe 2. But that's for known viruses. Obviously, other aspects of your immune system don't work quite as well when you're old. You produce less antibodies. Those are those proteins that stick to the pathogens to help identify and eliminate them. I'm quoting now from a report the BBC gave. Counterintuitively, flu is more lethal usually for those in the first chapter of their adulthood from 20 to 40 that are generally fit and strong. Most fatalities from the 2009 swine flu outbreak affected those under the age of 65. They were always hearing that we old uns should watch out whenever there's something like that going around. We get fewer allergies, apparently, when we're older, and the symptoms are likely to be less severe. According to Michael Grayson of the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, allergic disease peaks in childhood and then seems to decrease through your late adolescence into your 20s. Then there might be a resurgence in your 30s, but once you get over your 50s, the symptoms tend to get less common. Migraines go down as we get older. Attacks get shorter and less painful and less frequent. As for the brain aging, of course, there is dementia in old age, and we don't produce as many neurons as we did in childhood, but neuronal numbers apparently aren't great indicators of anything much. In the Seattle Longitudinal Study, which has followed the mental abilities of around 6,000 people since 1956 and is the longest-running study of its kind, with the same volunteers tested every 7 years, they discovered that while the older segment weren't as good at math and were maybe slower to respond to commands for vocabulary or spatial orientation and verbal memory and problem-solving abilities, they were better in their late 40s and 50s than they were in their 20s. And even with much older people, there is an accumulation of certain types of knowledge, what's called crystallized intelligence. As people age, the insulation around these long, wiry neurons is actually increased. So axons fire more quickly in middle-aged people than in younger ones. And there's a peak performance of the brain cells around that time. Yo, middle-aged people. Sex can also apparently be better in middle age because of an increased confidence in sexual activity. We stop sweating as much. People in their 20s sweat more than people in their 50s and on up. Our sweat glands shrink and become less numerous as we get older. So these aren't such bad prognoses for our increasing age. Getting older was the topic of my Sharon Hour tonight on Laguna's KX935. If you'd like to hear the show again, it does podcast on iTunes, or go to our website, kx935.com/shows/the-Sharon-Hour. That's sharing without the G, hour with the H. I'm Sharon James, wishing you a great week ahead and hoping you'll come back for more topics, interviews, conversations and music every Wednesday night at 9.